understand that they have public obligations that go beyond public relations. John Stumpf, who was the CEO, he said to me over coffee, and we did bump into each other, that he wanted to just distinguish Wells Fargo from all the other banks that had been caught up in the 2008 banking crisis, and he wanted to make sure that the public understood that Wells Fargo really was a responsible bank. And he said this with a complete seriousness. I mean, he fooled me.
We have 3 seconds.
In 3 seconds, let me just say, it's not just Trump. It's all of us.
The Common Good is Robert Reich's new book. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Thanks for joining us.
This is KBOO Portland. The time now is 8 o'clock.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the 28th Annual Cascade Festival of African Films from February 2nd through March 3rd. The Cascade Festival of African Films shows us Africa through the eyes of Africans, rather than a vision of Africa packaged for Western viewers. The films represent different countries and cultures and a range of lifestyles from pre-colonial to modern times, including both rural and urban settings. Films include 76 and the Footprints of Pan-Africanism and more at the Hollywood Theater, and The African Who Wanted to Fly, Foreign Bodies, Wulu, and many more at the Moriarty Arts and Humanities Building, Room 104 at the PCC Cascade Campus, 705 North Killingsworth Street in Portland. Again, that's the 28th Annual Cascade Festival of African Films from February 2nd through March 3rd. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland, unless otherwise noted. The Community Advisory Board will meet Tuesday, February 20th at 5:30 p.m.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor Michael Casehammer in concert on Saturday, February 24th from 8 to 11 p.m. at the Newmark Theater in Portland. Michael Casehammer, known mostly as Canadian jazz and boogie-woogie pianist and vocalist, will be performing with a 6-piece band touring for his 11th album called No Filter. Again, that's Michael Casehammer in concert on Saturday, February 24th from 8 to 11 p.m. at the Newmark Theater, 1111 Southwest Broadway in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Coming up this morning on KBOO, at 8, the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show discuss the indictments in the Russian election meddling case and take your calls. At 9, on Alternative Radio, Yale Law Professor James Forman Jr. dissects the criminal justice system as he discusses crime and punishment in Black America. At 10, it's Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. And at 10:15, it's Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein. At 11 on Stage and Studio, DMAE presents Black History Month documentary, Our Fathers Who Aren't in Heaven, produced by Michael Johnson. And at 11:30, Art Focus talks to Diane Durston of the Portland Japanese Garden about Hanakago, the art of bamboo flowers. And now it's time for the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show.
Hey, good morning.
Hey, good morning. It's snowing.
It's snowing, yes.
Yes.
Yeah, but there's more exciting stuff.
Oh, yeah, well, you know, the real things are the real things, and the other things are the horrible things.
Do you remember that old the 70s beer commercial?
Which one?
If you've got the time, we've got
the beer. Yeah, I do.
Yeah, but it's not Miller time now. It's Mueller time.
Okay,
Hang on. 13 indictments were handed out last week to Russian nationals.
Yeah,
in the ongoing Campaign collusion.
How are we going to fly over and grab him? Is that the
plan? Well, we'll get to that. Okay. This is big, big news for people who've been following us. And one thing we haven't done on this show is really get into the nuts and bolts of exactly how Russian actors influenced the last election. It's pretty fascinating stuff. We're going to get into that a little bit more. But first, harvest boxes.
Oh, yes. You know, this is so wonderful. Because poor people don't know how to select their fresh fruits and vegetables or find decent meat or anything. And besides which, they are too well paid with food stamps. So what we're going to do is we're going to give every poor family in the country, I don't know, once a week, once a month, once a year, a food box. And then they somehow these are going to be delivered by UPS or...
A harvest box.
How are they going to be delivered? How are they going to be made up? Who's going to make the profit from these boxes? A lot of profit will be involved. It's just a brilliant, brilliant scheme. I really salute it because, after all, as we know, people who are on food stamps are inherently unable to make wise choices for food. So rather than let us say, saying, well, no, you can't use food stamps for candy, you can't use food stamps for this, that, or the other thing, instead of doing that, we're going to give everybody, I don't know, once a week, once a month, a box of food, all of it canned, none of it fresh. This is so disgusting. This is so unbelievably Trumpian. I mean, you know, the Republicans turned into the party of the weird, the party of the cruel, the party of the harsh. And we got a budget director, you know, that I'm actually Mick Mulvaney. I mean, we actually have a kind of a government now that is essentially saying, if you're poor, screw you.
Essentially. That is what they're saying.
Well, it could be more complicated than that. We got to motivate them by starving them.
Right. Yeah, there's nothing but, you know, like saying lean and hungry to get people really.
Yeah, and then we're going to have a huge infrastructure project that Trump is bragging about, which essentially is a public-private deal where the corporations get rich and a new infrastructure is built that doesn't go anywhere near the homes of poorer people. We don't get a high-speed rail, for example.
No, we don't. Here's what really troubles me about this.
What?
It's the way that capitalism has thoroughly ruined the American food system.
Yeah.
For years now, it's been the fact that the calories, the most readily available and least expensive calories out there, mm-hmm. Meaning the food that's available most easily and accessibly to poor folks.
Tater chips,
you know, you name it.
Yeah.
These are the least nutritious calories out there.
Right.
And these harvest boxes are going to feature, quote, shelf-stable foodstuffs. Meaning stuff that's been so preserved and jacked up on God knows what kind of chemicals that it'll stay intact for thousands of years on your shelf. I'm exaggerating a little bit.
Well, but, you know, that means that anthropologists in the far future can wonder at it.
Right. And what this means is are the people most in need of healthy, readily available, healthy calories, fresh fruits and vegetables, non-processed foods, are not going to be able to get them. It's going to be even harder to get those things. Because at least when you had your little declining balance food stamp card, you could use it to buy these things.
Right.
I mean, it was still very difficult to do so because I challenge anybody listening to this broadcast to exist on a food stamp subsistence level for a week. It's hard to do. It's virtually impossible to do if you want to still eat healthily, like a healthy human being. And now that's going to be even farther out of reach.
Right.
Well, so this just
so I'm going to spend more time probably next week talking about the evil. I mean, truly evil, evil, evil plans against the poor that are being enacted even as we speak. But I think we have something else to deal with.
We do have something else to deal with. For those of you paying attention,
all 12 of you,
the president's campaign has been under investigation for some time. For colluding with Russian nationals to affect the outcome of the
election. We don't collude with no Russian.
That was awful. What kind of accent was that?
That was a Malvanian.
Malvanian?
Yeah, a Malvanian accent.
Where's Malvania?
Somewhere near Ravadia.
Okay. This is why everyone tunes into this program. By the way, what is this program?
Oh, this is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show. And in fact, you're Abe Proctor, I'm Joe Uris, and the number is 231-8187, and we'd love to hear from you.
Yeah, we also take your written commentary at our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/AbeandJoe, and also over the Twitter wire at HonestAbe72. Now, as we mentioned, on Friday, the Justice Department handed out 13 indictments to Russian nationals and three companies operated out of Russia. That essentially unveiled an incredibly sophisticated effort to undermine the 2016 election in the United States. This doesn't tell us a whole lot about what officials in the Trump administration did, but we, as I'm going to mention in a few minutes, we know quite a bit about that already. What this did was expose the length and breadth to which this Russian conspiracy, and that's what it is, what they were able to do to influence the outcome of the 2016 election. Now, I want to put something on the table before we get into this. I've heard from many places on the left, including on this program, callers to this program, claim that the whole Russian story is nothing but a distraction. It's an attempt to paper over the inconsistencies and fallibilities of Hillary Clinton as a presidential candidate. And it's been labeled as an excuse by the Democratic Party for why they weren't able to win an election that they should have won. I don't know to what extent, mathematically speaking, the Russian effort was able to affect the outcome of the 2016 election. But it's indubitable that an effort took place to do just that. And it's entirely possible that the combination of our archaic electoral system...
Why don't we have paper ballots? Never mind. Go ahead.
Our archaic electoral system, our modern-day dependence on... social media as a means of acquiring news, and the lingering resentment on the right towards Hillary Clinton that has festered now for several decades. All these things in combination created a set of conditions where an attempt by the Russians to nudge the election in one way or another may have had an appreciable result in the end. Again, we don't know the extent to which, you know, I can't tell you what percentage, you know, votes were swung one way or another. But we do know that this effort went on. We do know that it was extensive and incredibly complex, and we'll get into that here in just a second. And we do know, beyond a shadow of a doubt, that members of the Trump campaign met with these very people.
Well, that hasn't been an indictment done yet. I said
yes
that very
no.
poorly, but, you know.
Well, we've had a number of indictments handed out already, and we know from the testimony there, people like Paul Manafort and others... we know that these contacts took place.
Yeah.
We know that Trump Jr. Met on that fateful day back in July with Russian operatives and was tipped off about the forthcoming Hillary Clinton email scandal. We know that all these things happen. We know that the Trump campaign colluded with the Russians. We know that the Russians were embarked on an incredibly sophisticated attempt to sway the outcome of the election. We knew that these things are happening.
Mm-hmm.
What we don't know yet is to the how far this goes up the food chain in the Trump campaign. Circumstantial evidence suggests that it went all the way to the top. But I presume that we'll find out in fairly short order. What we're seeing from Mueller and what we've seen throughout this investigation is a very deliberate, intentional attempt to build a watertight case against the Trump campaign. The indictments that we've seen thus far, combined with the indictments that came out Friday, are just additional steps in this process. He is building up to something. So this was pretty exciting stuff for people who have been paying attention.
Well, and that last phrase is important. People who are paying attention. There are, I mean, I don't know the numbers exactly, but somewhere between 30% and 40% of the American voters don't believe any of what you just said.
Right, because it's fake news.
Right, it's all fake news.
Yeah, indeed. And that I think is a separate discussion. But I think perhaps the saddest and most far-reaching casualty of the decline in the quality of news media in general and the polarization of our electorate and the sorts of thinking that drive people to receive their information from essentially closed sources and to not interact with each other across the boundaries of those information bubbles.
Well, yeah. I mean, what we've really developed is a society that has separate units of I'm going to put quotes on this, truth, that are unquestionable. Some of the things that I'm beginning to discover is, for example, that when third parties appear, they can be used very handily by the Russians. When Bernie Sanders runs against Hillary, a candidate who I personally thought would have been a better choice, it is also the case that the Russians were supporting him. And I don't think he knew that. And I don't think, what's her name, the third party lady, knew that.
Right. Yeah,
what
exactly.
What is her name?
Stein.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Dr. Stein.
Yeah. In the primary phase of the campaign, the indictments reveal that Russian operatives took efforts to support Bernie Sanders, not because they wanted some sort of democratic socialist utopia in the United States. No, they wanted to undermine Hillary Clinton. And I think that there's evidence to suggest, given the timeline of all of this, this whole effort started right around 2014. This was after President Obama had imposed sanctions against Russia.
Right.
For the annexation of the Crimea. There was a lot of personal animus between Vladimir Putin and Barack Obama. They didn't like each other one bit. And also a similar sort of animus between Putin and Secretary Clinton.
Well, he hated, I mean, this is really well known. I mean, his hatred of Mrs. Clinton is incredibly strong.
Indeed. So we have a dictator with the resources of a nation at his disposal.
Are you talking about Trump?
I'm talking about Putin.
Oh, sorry.
Trump's not quite there yet. No. Putin right now is setting the bar.
Yes.
We have a dictator with the resources of a nation at his disposal. Some estimates count him as the most wealthy person in the world. With a personal grudge against, at the time, the sitting president of the United States and the heir apparent to the presidency, Hillary Clinton. So it is not a great stretch of the imagination to suggest that Vladimir Putin enacted this operation not only to destabilize a rival on the global stage, but to exact some sort of personal revenge against both Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton.
Yeah, I think your analysis is correct. I think there is, however, in some intervening variables. The Clinton campaign was not well run, and they didn't, in the end, go to the Rust Belt states that were crucial to winning this election.
Indeed. As I mentioned earlier, it's a combination of very specific set of circumstances that allowed this election to be tipped the way it was.
Right.
Probably could not be replicated again, even if we tried.
I hope not.
Yeah. Okay, so the indictment lays out in extensive detail how an outfit called Russia's Internet Research Agency began in 2014 an effort to systematically interfere, quote, with the U.S. political and electoral processes, including the presidential election of 2016, end quote. This project involved staging on-the-ground protests in the United States, creating hundreds of social media accounts pretending to be American citizens, trying to suppress minority voter turnout, and even promoting false claims that Democrats committed voter fraud. In many of these cases, Russian operatives stole the identities of American citizens in order to operate online or pose as American citizens in real life as they helped Republican operatives to stage political rallies.
Can I ask you a question?
Yes.
What are bots and trolls?
What are bots and trolls? Troll is sort of a generic term on the internet for somebody who seemingly exists just to lob rhetorical grenades and bricks into a conversation, to immediately to criticize and debase conversation and drag it down to the lowest level.
And a bot?
A bot is a computer program automated to do just that.
Ah, like a robot.
Like a robot.
Okay.
Right, exactly. Also, according to the indictment, the defendants, as I mentioned, posed as Americans to operate these social media pages and to hold political rallies tended to sow distrust of the U.S. political system and influence votes. Defendants used YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and other platforms to conduct what they referred to, quote, as information warfare. Reading from the indictment again, by early to mid-2016, defendants' operations included supporting the presidential campaign of then-candidate Donald J. Trump and disparaging Hillary Clinton. The indictment goes on to say they engaged in operations primarily intended to communicate derogatory information about Hillary Clinton, to denigrate other candidates such as Ted Cruz and Marco Rubio, and to support Bernie Sanders during the primary and then candidate Donald Trump. This was
Jill Stein.
And Jill Stein, yes.
Yes.
I mean, some of this, the details are almost laughable in retrospect. Donald Trump himself even responded to a tweet from an account pretending to be the official account for the Tennessee Republican Party. So you had the president himself interacting with these fake accounts. This particular account, the Tennessee Republican Party fake account, managed to accumulate hundreds of thousands of followers. So, I mean, this is not an insignificant amount of influence waged, particularly when you consider how people's patterns for absorbing information have changed over the years. Lots and lots of people get their primary exposure to news through platforms like Facebook and Twitter, and then subsequently follow those links through to web pages where they get more information.
Well, I just want to throw in, we had an argument last week, and I want to emphasize it again. You and many people are addicted, I say addicted, to the internet. The internet is a foul device which distorts the truth and is a shortcut to oblivion.
Well, that's a bunch of hyperbole, and you sound very much like a troll.
Yes, I'm the troll.
The indictment claims that the Internet Research Agency, this is the Russian intelligence agency that oversaw this effort, was spending, by the end of the presidential campaign, some $1.25 million per month on this effort. So this was not chump change, and this was not some lark. This was a well-orchestrated, incredibly sophisticated, well-coordinated effort to nudge the American electoral process in the direction of Donald Trump.
But now that we've discovered this, we're preparing legislation to create paper ballots and ways to block this kind of thing ever happening again, right?
Of course we are. What else would any sane republic do in the wake of such allegations?
You mean like the Dutch did during the last elections they had?
Indeed, yeah. So, of course, nothing like that is happening. Not even close. In a rare display of unity a few weeks ago, both houses of Congress overwhelmingly passed a bill imposing further sanctions against Russia for meddling in the election. The president has publicly stated that he doesn't believe the Russians interfered in the election, and he is not going to impose those sanctions. So that was a law duly enacted by both houses of Congress that the president is now choosing to ignore.
Well, you know, he has problems. He gets caught up in the bedroom, and Melania's leaving him, or wanted to leave him, and is stuck, and she's kind of angry and sad and cries.
Yeah, it's all very sad. It's all very sad, but it's all very, it's just to be upsetting for anybody who claims to have any sort of investment in the electoral integrity of the United States. Now, I don't want people to call up and say that the United States has been involved in undermining elections around the world for years. We're going to stipulate to that fact, yes, that is true. The United States has been doing that for years around the world.
So this is a quid pro quo?
No, that's not what I'm saying at all. But okay. I've also heard, you know, because I daily dip my toes into that cesspool that you just described, the internet. And I have heard leftists say, well, what are you all fired up about? We've been doing this for years to other countries. It serves us right, blah, blah, blah. Be that as it may, no, it doesn't serve us right. No, we should not have interfered with any elections anywhere in the world. We should not have done any of those things. That does not excuse what the Russians did to us, nor does it make it right, nor should you interpret that as somehow the United States getting what was coming to it. I want to live in a republic where the electoral mechanism is clean. And if a foreign power launches an attack, and this was an attack, I want appropriate measures taken. I want the president of the United States to be up in arms about this and doing everything in his power to make sure it never happens again.
He's too busy playing golf. I mean, be real.
I think that's quite the case, yes.
These people get shot and killed, and he's whining about how he can't go to his golf program.
Yeah, it's terrible.
I mean, really, that really happened.
I know it did. Let's go to the phones. Jeff, good morning.
It's actually Jesse White.
Jeffy, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
So I have 41 years old, and my first political memory was Oliver North on the stand saying over and over again, I have no clear recollection of that, sir. And I remember turning to my mother and her saying, you know, when I asked her, well, what does that mean that he was lying? And, you know, I can't help but shake that feeling when I'm told to believe in this sort of Mexican standoff that seems to be happening between all three branches of government. It makes sense that, yes, in fact, all signs point towards Russian involvement in our elections, Russian involvement in taking apart our democracy piece by piece in every way they can. And yes, you're right, we've done that all over the world. What gets me is that we're sort of falling into the tit for tat back and forth rather than looking at the underpinnings of democracy and figuring out how we can support that. Because meanwhile, you know, there's two Supreme Court cases that are getting at gerrymandering. There's several different states right now that have state Supreme Court. Justice Alito, of all, like the most conservative in the third district, kicked it back to Pennsylvania Supreme Court. And we're now looking at seriously redistricting after the red tide in 2010, which is a real tangible, palpable chance for people to get involved in their local communities and retake the democracy that's been lost from the inside out. And I would just like to point out that Frederick Douglass said, you know, true power concedes nothing without demand. It never has and it never will. If we keep approaching this as if democracy was outside of us, as if it was something that they had to give to us, we will never have that. We're going to have to fight and scrap for every little bit, every shred of what is left of American democracy. And the irony is I find myself looking towards the judiciary and the FBI, which are people that were killing Fred Hampton back in the day.
It is ironic, isn't it?
You know, and I look at that and go, my God, are strange bedfellows at very least.
Well, yeah, I mean, look, I grew up in a world of a vast supposed red scare, red treasonous behavior that was the source of all of the reforms that we saw in the 30s and 40s. And in fact, I had family members who were essentially attacked by the FBI. And I never in my life would have believed that the FBI would turn out to be a useful tool. And here it is. And we're so reactionary, we're so messed up that, in fact, the FBI is becoming, in my mind, the good guys. That's weird. Really weird.
Well, it's weird, but it's also, we must admit, part of an effort to undermine democracy. I mean, the beauty of a Mexican standoff is that power has been made diffuse, right? And one of the things that Saul Alinsky, who was a guy who wrote a book called...
I'm sorry, we
had to let you go there.
I had to let you go. We're having an important issue about what words can be allowed. And we sometimes have to dump people who are saying perfectly fine things, except for that word or this word.
Unfortunate, because I think you're on a roll there, caller.
Yeah.
Let's go back to the phones. Who's next? Eric, good morning.
Yeah, can you hear me?
I can. You're on the air.
Hey, did you hear this morning that our illustrious Supreme Court justice is going to be canned for grab ass?
For what?
Don't say it again.
For accosting a woman at some function. I didn't get all the details.
Oh, I don't know. I don't know about this. I haven't kept up with this. I think that the whole Me Too movement is an important phenomenon, and I think that women are right to be very angry. I think also that it's entirely possible that somebody on the Supreme Court would be an arrogant male chauvinist pig.
Well, think in your mind, who was the one that attacked Anita Hill?
Oh, Clarence.
Yeah, Clarence.
Yeah.
Clarence Thomas.
Clarence has a current grab-ass event at some function he attended.
I think I heard a news story about this recently, but I don't think we want to go there today.
No.
It's really pretty far off the
topic. I'm just saying, if we can keep it on the air.
Well, I think we should pay attention to these things.
Certainly.
We're not up on this for right now, so we're going to pass.
Thank you.
Thanks for the call. Before we go back to the phones, I want to mention this. Generally, if you're watching the president closely, and whether or not you like him,
the waddler,
it's fascinating. Psychologists are going to have a field day looking into this guy's career.
He grew an inch last week.
Oh, did he?
He's not fat.
Okay, here's an observable pattern. Every time there's some bad news that possibly implicates the president and or his family, he will usually go on a Twitter and tweet and have a tweet eruption. And quite predictably, a tweet eruption followed these indictments on Friday. Here's just one of those tweets. And I'm going to try to read this through. This really makes me pretty incredibly angry. But here's what your president and mine
tweeted. Our president, yes.
Very sad that the FBI missed all of the many signals sent out by the Florida school shooter. This is not acceptable. They are spending too much time trying to prove Russian collusion with the Trump campaign. There is no collusion. Get back to the basics and make us all proud. So there you have it. Had the FBI not been investigating Trump, they could have stopped the latest school massacre.
Well, look, this is a conflagration of an enormous sort. The fire here is in fact, that there were lots of signs that this young man was going to be a violent person or could be a violent person. There are many such people in our society, unfortunately, that do not get services or help or something. And in fact, we are a society where many people are so alienated and so angry. And since we give anyone over the age of 18 the right to have any kind of long gun they want, it's inevitable that these horrible events will take place. And I am really proud of the young people in Florida and elsewhere who are organizing to demand that the NRA change its position and that the government change its position to make these kinds of weapons less accessible.
It's really quite extraordinary.
Yeah, it's wonderful.
Yeah, it really is. If you haven't watched this, go on YouTube and search for Emma Gonzalez.
Oh, she's great.
Oh, my goodness. She gave about a seven-minute speech last week in the aftermath of the shooting. She was a student at the school. And it is a thing to behold. Emma Gonzalez, go on YouTube and watch it.
Yeah, she's cool.
Yeah, she is cool. Let's go back to the phones. Annalisa, good morning.
Good morning. That's exactly what I wanted to bring up. That is the most profound young person's common sense speech that I have ever heard in my life. A senior in high school, she might be 17 or 18, and she gives this, what you said, 7 minute speech, and she named all the points that none of the leaders of this country brings up because they're afraid for their re-election or for the money. $30 million Trump received from the NRA, she said, $30 million. And yeah, all the points. So I think people should, she's a hero in my eyes. And of course, all the young folk that are with her. So thank you. Have a good day.
Thank you for the call.
Yeah. I mean, this young woman is absolutely blistering. And she pulls no punches. Absolutely eviscerates everybody who so is in such dire need of evisceration. The NRA, President Trump, the spineless politicians in Congress who are in the NRA's pocket. It's a thing to behold.
One of the most horrible things about the politics of today, beyond the impacts of it and the bad decisions that are being made, is the bad faith being displayed by what used to be the opposition or the conservative forces of the Republican Party. It's no longer conservative in any meaningful sense. It's well beyond that. It's reactionary, and it supports the 1% at the top, and it has no interest in the welfare of the American people, even though it pretends to.
Yeah, you're absolutely correct.
I mean, it's really outrageous. It's really creepy.
Yeah, it is really creepy. And if nothing else comes from this mess that has been made of our constitutional republic, if nothing else comes of this, the GOP can no longer don the mantle of moral righteousness or of family values ever, ever, ever again.
Well, I think they're
absolutely bankrupt as far as that goes.
I think I think you're wrong. I think they'll don that mantle.
Oh, they will.
I mean, they shouldn't, but they will. I also think that it's really important to understand the degree to which the money power has infiltrated. You know, I have always argued, and you and I argue about this some, that there is this inevitable process of late-stage capitalism, which I have always argued leaves to one form or another of fascism. Well, we're at the cusp of that, I really believe. And I think it's very frightening, and I think most people are not paying attention. Most people generally don't pay attention to politics anyway. But this is an example where so much needs to be done. And I want to add one other thing. If we went to paper ballots nationally, literally paper ballots, a lot of these manipulations wouldn't even be possible.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Canada has a paper ballot system, and they managed to count all their votes on election night.
Well, you know, those Canadians, they're good with the math.
Apparently. But I really don't think you have to be that good at math to count stuff. Counting stuff, as I recall, now it's been a few years, that was one of the first things you learn in your math education.
You mean like 1, 2, 3?
Counting stuff.
Counting stuff, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You're not even doing any addition, subtraction, any of those other operations. Just counting stuff. But I digress. Let's go back to the phones. Michael, good morning.
Good morning, guys.
Hey.
What's on your mind?
I think you're paying attention in the wrong direction.
Enlighten us, please.
I have nothing to do. There is software now that can take about a couple of minutes of video of somebody and then reprocess it so that they can be saying anything you want them to say.
That's true.
And it's undistinguishable from if they really took a video of that person saying that.
That's true.
Go on.
I mean, there's an article about that called Information Apocalypse. There are going to be tweets that you can't distinguish from a real person tweeting. There are going to be videos you can't distinguish from the real person saying what they really said. And all of this stuff is going to spread by social media. You're looking at like one instance of what Russia did and missing that social media have created this incredible vulnerability in the group mind where all kinds of people without a whole lot of money can inject all kinds of stuff and get people going, like, you know, Trump with his tweets. Mm-hmm. That's the least of our problems. The most of our problems is that no one's going to be able to tell what's real. The social media is the problem, not what one particular actor.
Here is a case of where you and I absolutely agree. I think that we need to go back to a far more basic, far more, if you will, primitive way of exchanging information, like newsprint, like things that are verifiable. I think that the electronic age is ushering in an age of hyper-fascism, actually.
Well, I don't know that I would call it fascism, and we're not going back. What the internet needs to develop is an immune system somehow.
Oh, okay.
It's like a nervous system. It's like a nervous system of a psychotic that can't distinguish reality from echoes in its own mind. And that's what we've got going right now with social media. And
yeah,
that's a huge problem. And, you know, what Russia did was a minor effect. And the only reason why anybody gets wound up about it is because the election was so close that all kinds of minor effects could have tipped it one way or the other. Was it Comey's memo? Was it the Russians? Was it the weather that day? You know, I mean,
I agree with everything you said right up until then, Michael. Now you're saying that the sum total of the effect of Russian collusion or Russian efforts to sway the election may have been minuscule. And that may be true, and we may never know the exact extent to which they were successful in their efforts. But here's why everybody ought to be fired up about this. A foreign power worked actively and extensively and for a long period of time to undermine the American electoral process. And so far, the federal government has done exactly nothing to address the problem.
And we got an election coming up where the same thing is going to happen.
You should be up in arms regardless of where you fall out along the political spectrum about this.
I'm up in arms that the internet needs to develop an immune system. I'm up in arms. Why, you think Russia was the only country that was working here?
I don't know.
Subterfuge?
I don't know.
I mean, you think, like, and then there are all these, like, organizations here that were doing things that might have been nefarious. You know, see, you've got, like, this enormous threat vector that there's currently no defense for, and you're concentrating so much on one particular thing that you're missing the bigger picture.
That may be true, but I even though I call for even though I am very critical of and I call for control, not government control, but rational control at all levels of the social media, and have real doubt about its validity. I don't want censorship, and B, I don't think that a lot of these problems are insolvable. For example, the one thing that Abe and I keep calling for is paper ballots. I don't understand why something like that can't be done in the United States of America, nor do I understand why the system allows for a electoral college which could be adjusted simply by making the rule that the state's vote would be the vote of the Electoral College members from that state. And you wouldn't need a constitutional amendment for that. I don't understand why these things don't happen. Or to put it another way, I understand why, but I'm afraid that is a horrible, horrible reality.
Hey, Michael, thanks for the call. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, sure. Bye-bye.
Yeah. You know, we don't always agree with Michael. In fact, we seldom do.
Or each other.
But he's a smart guy, and by and large, I appreciate his contributions.
Well, and he's into the machine.
Yeah, he is into the machine. But he raised a very important point, and that is the extent to which social media platforms have become gatekeepers for the rest of the internet. I don't have the statistics right at hand, but the vast majority, and I'm not exaggerating when I say vast majority, of internet traffic these days is driven to individual websites through platforms like Facebook and Twitter and elsewhere. People run across a headline on Facebook. They're interested by it. They click through and they get to the source website for whatever article or video it is they happen to be watching. What this has done is it's had a corrosive effect on the reporting of news online, because websites, including, you know, reputable news organizations, realize that if they want traffic to come to their sites, and if they exist on an advertising model for revenue, they need people to come to their sites, that they've got to put out splashy, attention-grabbing headlines on Facebook, or they're not going to get that traffic to their sites. And this means that they have to lead with stuff that is garish, that is exploitative, that does nothing more than grab the momentary attention of somebody whose finger is on a mouse. This has a deleterious effect on news reporting in general.
Well, I think fingering mouses is a bad idea. I really am a Luddite on this issue. I really do believe that culturally and intellectually, we're not ready for the technologies we have.
And stay off my lawn, you kids.
Yeah.
All right, let's go back to the phone.
My Gran Torino is a sacred thing. Go ahead.
John, you're next. Good morning.
Hello.
You're on the air.
I'd like to back this up a little bit to where Putin got into power and what has happened in Russia and why the Russians, of course, they are always going to behave this way. They have been since the 18th century. They've always had an incredible what you might call a secret service. You know, they were able to turn Talleyrand back in the French Revolution into an agent of the Russian government. Are you aware of that?
No.
It was a famous statement where, you know, Talleyrand basically realized that Napoleon was running France into the ground and decided to ally himself to the Russians. Now, but the point I'm trying to make is this. There's an overriding issue, and that issue is the Russians and the Americans are the only countries which can destroy the entire Earth. And Putin has been trying desperately. He wanted to back down the confrontation which we were pressing on them. And if you're aware, are you not, of what happened with Biden and the senator from Arizona and what they did in the Ukraine? You know about that, right?
Not by your description.
Well, they basically went to the Ukraine and they created a revolution, and the revolution with them, and that, of course,
I'm making an arbitrary rule, and unfortunately you fall victim to it. I think the word CRAP will not be used on the show for.
Oh, I'm sorry about that.
No, it's not your fault. I made a decision because we worry about the FCC.
At any rate, the point being that the Crimean incident, which is that, you know, Khrushchev basically gave the Crimea to Ukraine because he was a Ukrainian, and the Russians decided that they couldn't have the United States pressing up so close because of their great fears. And then, so this whole thing has been precipitated by both parties, and of course they're each trying to use whatever means they can. I mean, we do the same thing with Russia, and Russia takes steps to try to prevent us from doing the same thing.
Well,
and they were given a windfall by this this new media mode, and so the point is, they thought they were going to get with Trump, they were going to get someone who would ease off on the confrontation, and Trump, as soon as he got into power, got turned by the powers that be. I'm sure somebody comes into the office and you know, when a president takes same thing with Obama, if someone and they go in and they tell them, no, look, we're rivals to Russia, and we're confronting them, and not only that, but the whole Pentagon budget is dependent upon keeping this rivalry intact. And so Trump was just turned, and now we have a situation where this is very minor.
Yeah, if Trump was turned, then why didn't he happily enforce the sanctions bill that Congress passed?
We already have sanctions in place. The sanctions are doing having zero effect. What the Russians are doing now, the first thing you should do in the morning, every morning you get up and go on the internet, go to RT, which is the Russian outlet. It's their propaganda outlet. It tells you just what they're doing, tells you what the Chinese are doing, tells you what the Brits are doing, tells you what we're doing, but in a different way. And Russia is now moving toward this vast Eurasian consortium with the Chinese, where they're going to build the road both by land and sea from all the way from, you know, the end of China all the way into the middle of Europe. Russia has three or four pipelines to ship gas to Germany, bypassing Poland, and the Russians really actually do not care. They've moved toward an alliance with China, long term.
Well, I'm not sure. I'm not sure about that in terms of an alliance. I know there's an enormous trade process underway. I think the Chinese are revitalizing what used to be called the Silk Road, and they're building. Well, they're building high-speed rail. They're building very good highways and so on all over the world, including Latin America, the United States.
But the major link, though, is through Russia and the other Asiatic republics. So the Russians, they would like to have a better relationship with the United States, but we've made it very difficult, you know.
Well, I would like to have a better relationship with the United States myself.
Hey, I think we're going to have to leave it there, sir, but thank you very much.
Yeah.
Appreciate your comments.
Well, some very interesting comments. I also think that when we analyze the geopolitics of the situation, the role that the current Republican administration is playing is so reactionary and so stupid that it's either directly treason, that is, they know they're doing it and it's cool with them, or they are so incompetent and so, I don't know what to call it, so primitive in their thinking that they're setting things up for the United States to eventually become an isolated power.
I would go with both of those things. I'd like to remind everybody that treason against the United States is a capital crime.
It is a capital crime. They give you, what do they give you, shots?
They don't prescribe the methods of execution.
No.
Only that execution should happen.
I want the guillotine.
Now the evidence suggests collusion with a hostile foreign power to influence an election, which may or may not be treason in the eyes of the law. And let's make sure I'm perfectly clear here. I'm not calling for anyone to be executed.
Oh.
I'm trying to underscore just how serious these crimes are. And more than that, while we're on the subject of sanctions against Russia, the most recent sanctions bill that we talked about earlier in the show was passed by both houses of Congress late last year, signed into law by President Trump late last year. And he has since that time said, no, we're not going to impose these sanctions. So this is the chief executive of the United States who had the opportunity to impose his veto on this sanction legislation. If he didn't want to impose the sanctions, it was within his power to veto the bill. He did not. He signed it into law. It is the law of the land.
He didn't even pocket veto it.
No. It is the law of the land. And now he has since gone on the record saying, no, I'm not going to enforce this law of the land.
Well, I mean, you got to appreciate the investment that the Trump organization yeah. is continuously making in Russia.
No, I don't have to appreciate that.
Sorry, I misphrased that.
I appreciate that that laws are binding and that no one is above them. And the President of the United States does not have the discretion to enforce or not enforce a law.
Yeah, sort of. I mean, I actually think that things have degenerated to the point where what used to be bizarre is now normative.
That's also true on so many levels.
Yeah, really.
Yeah. Okay, let's go back to the phones. Joan, good morning.
Good morning. I just have one simple point to make. If we're going to have an effective movement, we have to be able to move back and forth into different modes. That means flexibility. That means we need analog as well as digital, especially since digital is in the process of being taken over. We need plastic. We need cash. We may need the internet, although I managed to do without it. And we also need the post office. And we need to pay attention to what's happening on many levels, because people who are, let's say, think they're tuned into what's going on, such as the people in the administration who are not really tuned into what's going on, mm-hmm. means that we need to not only be really tuned in into what's really going on, but to be able to be continually inventing new ways of combining things so that we're not stuck in the little boxes that they want to put us in, because they're not capable of thinking outside of these little boxes. So we need the analog, please. Don't be deluded by the digital fantasy. It is a fantasy, and it's meant, I think, in a lot of ways to distract us, which is no big news. But don't throw the old stuff out that works along with the new stuff, which is easily taken over. And that's my message.
All right. Well, thank you very much. I think you're making a very good point.
Agreed.
Along my lines, you know. I'm pretty much convinced that the technologies that we have, while brilliant technologies, are not so useful in a society where most people believe that a divine power is running everything. And
most people don't believe that.
No, a lot of people believe that. Uh-huh. And that the climate is not changing. And
again, most people don't believe that.
Well, I don't know what most people believe.
Okay, you know the difference between the words most and some. Right?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
Okay, some people believe
that the climate isn't changing. Make a compromise and just say a lot of people.
Okay.
We don't have to say whether it's a majority or not.
I'm fine with making a compromise. I just don't want you to misuse the word most anymore.
Oh, dear.
Yes, indeed.
You poor babe. Okay.
Let's go back to the phones. Marianne, good morning.
Yes, hi. Have a tremor, so bear with me.
Of course. Let us know what's on your mind.
I absolutely agree with the previous caller who gave some background on our relationship with Russia and the Soviet Union and how we have interfered in their internal affairs, and this whole feeling that Abe gives makes me see him as highly hypocritical. I mean, come on. We go in and assassinate heads of states and overthrow governments. And yet, Abe is so outraged by what has gone on, which probably didn't have anything to do with the outcome of our election. And that's all I can conjure up to say with my poor ability to speak. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for the
call.
And
don't sell yourself short. I think you speak very, very well.
Well, I think she's making a really important point. This is, in a way, I hate to say this, but we're getting some of our own medicine here. You know,
that's true. And I thought that I'd stipulated to that fairly clearly of the show.
You did.
Yes. Yes, we are guilty of things like this and far worse, and have been for decades. But that doesn't make it right, what happened in our election at the hands of the Russians. And that doesn't mean that we should sit back and take it.
Well, it also doesn't mean that Trump isn't an active agent of the Russians.
Yeah, that's true.
And his family certainly
are
profiting thereby.
Now, I don't know if we'll ever be able to determine exactly how much influence the Russians had on the last election. Perhaps we can. I know there are people out there who understand data and statistics much better than I do. And that maybe perhaps that the extent of that influence will one day be able to be determined. I don't know. But again, I maintain that an attack like this warrants a response.
Well, it's like a kind of a digital Pearl Harbor.
That's a little grandiose, but yes.
No, it's not a little grandiose. When you attack the structure of a country, and I'm talking about the political structure, I'm talking about the legal structure, I'm talking about the democratic structure. When you attack it, you're attacking the country. And
yes,
we have to recognize that. And this is something we cannot allow to pass.
Okay, I take it back. Not grandiose.
Okay.
Right on the money.
I think so.
Yeah. Something like this demands a response. Now, I'm not talking about a military response.
No, that would be stupid.
Nor am I talking about retaliation in kind. I'm talking about taking appropriate steps to prevent this from happening again. And as you've brought up a couple times already today, Joe, we've got another election this year, and nothing has been done.
Well, you know, that's right. And then again, I want to make a two-word partial solution to the problem. Paper ballots.
Let's go back to the phones. James, good morning.
Good morning. I don't know if anybody's talked about this morning, kind of late to the conversation here, but, the one thing that people miss about that shooting in Florida, because they want to say that the FBI dropped the ball, but the one thing that the one critical piece that everybody's missing is that we have white supremacists in key positions in the White House. Jeff Sessions, Donald Trump, Stephen Miller, Steve Bannon for a time. This whole administration has defunded the FBI's ability to keep white nationalist hate groups in their sight, and then they've replaced it with black identity extremists, or as we all call it, COINTEL 2.0.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like we can't say that they dropped the ball, because we have sympathizers. We have people who've donned the robes who work in our government. And that's not anything new, but definitely with the election of Obama and having 8 years of Obama in office, these white supremacist trolls have had time to seethe and simmer and get ready to bring something bigger and badder into the office. I mean, that was the seeds of Trump's victory were sown in Obama's election. So, but they're already trying to create sympathy for Nicholas Cruz. And that's another thing. And that's, because either they're saying he was, mentally ill. They want to say he has autism and all that. And I work with people with disabilities. I know that's a huge issue, but they're using it as a way to garner sympathy, the same way they did with Dylann Roof, talking about his mama being sick and he needs to take care of his mom. It's like, no, you don't get that, because black and brown folks don't get that same sympathy when something goes down. Shoot, when that little kid fell into Harambe's enclosure, and then they had to shoot Harambe, they went and dug up that kid's father's past to be like, obviously.
I have to interrupt you because we're really running out of time. So I appreciate what you're saying, but we are locked into our programming mode.
We are, but I can't let us go without addressing what the caller said. You know, I think he's absolutely spot on here. These are seemingly unrelated incidents, but let's not forget that Trump's message was animated by racial animus, by xenophobia, by homophobia, and we know that the Russian interference in the election specifically targeted these fractures in the American electorate. They pretended to be, in many cases, Black Lives Matter activists. They tried to exacerbate the racial divisions in the body politic in the United States. So, no, these two issues are intimately connected, and I'm grateful to the caller for bringing that up.
Yeah, and I agree with you, and I want to thank everybody for listening and urge you to stay tuned. Best in music and best in public affairs programming. That's KBOO.
This is KBOO Portland. The time now is 9 o'clock. And coming up next is Alternative Radio.
No classrooms, no teachers, no students at KBOO. Only community members sharing their skills with one another and passing on what they have learned from one DJ to the next generation of programmers. We believe we all have something to teach and we all have something to learn. Knowledge should be free to access. Your support of KBOO ensures this. Help us build a city of artistic media makers. Long live DIY radio and join us on Kickstarter today.
Go to kboo.fm/Kickstarter. Donate to the campaign and share it with your friends. And thank you for your support of KBOO.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Souls, a Celebration Works concert series by Resonance Ensemble on Sunday, February 25th at 2 p.m. at the First Presbyterian Church in Portland. Souls explores the mystical traditions of Islam, Judaism, and Christianity with their common threads of selflessness and compassion. The